You're listening to Trek FM.
Well, normally a 602 Club episode would start with me saying, "Hey, this is Matt, and I wanted to welcome you into the 602 Club, Trek FM's local watering hole," something like that. But Norm and I are already here hanging out pre-show. We're pre-gaming it. And the reason we're doing that is, Norm, what time is it?
It is time to pick the winner of the contest. That's why we're here.
Yeah, that's why we're here. We wanted to make sure that we got a chance to get together. Yeah, together. So that we could pick out the winner together. Because
as together as we can.
Yeah. We wanted it to. We've established that we wanted it to do it together, because we're both giving things away for the 602 Club. We're very excited about that. Now,
right.
Before we do the actual drawing, and I have my hat here, my NX-01 hat. Ruby was really kind. She said Trimp lent her this hat once, and she never gave it back. But I actually have the NX-01 hat here, and I put everybody's name in the hat, and you might be able to hear this. That's right. That's all the names in there. But before we do, let's run down what the winner here is going to get. One is a beautiful, and Norm keeps showing to me on the screen here, and it's fantastic. The beautiful USS Vengeance model from Eagle Moss. And let me tell you, this is not the small Eagle Moss. This is the monster size.
Right.
And so, in fact, I think that it's basically, we just say it's Vengeance size.
It is literally three times bigger and three times faster and three times angrier than any of the other Eagle Moss offering. So, and it's actually quite spectacular. This is one of the handful of special edition Eagle Moss production models that they made for this line. Only the J.J. Abrams Enterprise, the Deep Space Nine oversize, this and the Klingon Bird of Prey, and I believe the Borg Cube are available for a higher price point. So what you will be winning is an exclusive model that you can't really get without being part of the program.
Which, I gotta say, is I'm so thankful for you doing that, Norm, for one of the listeners here. Plus, on top of that, you will get a $50 gift card to Amazon, which means you can get anything geeky you like. And on top of that, if that's not good enough, Norm, I ramped it up and I decided that it would be great to be able to have that listener on their own supplemental to be able to talk about all their favorite geeky things.
That's a fantastic idea. I love that. And the reason why I say it is because I love having new fans come on the show and expressing how much they love Star Trek or Star Wars, whatever fandom that you're in with us, because sitting down in the 602 Club and talking about that is really kind of why you started this, Matthew. This is our forum. This is our den and safe haven of being able to talk about what we love talking about on a daily basis. And I think that a fan who supported you with a great review should be able to experience that with us, with the people that enjoy doing it probably better than most. So,
well, I have to say that, you know, quoting the wonderful James Bond song, nobody does it better than the fans of the 602 Club, and you guys really stepped it up. We got some amazing reviews. Honestly, I was looking through today, and I wanted to let you guys know where we got to. We have 48 star ratings, 37 written reviews, which is awesome. And then, as you all know, we did launch the Star Wars special feed for the 602 Club, so people can just find all the Star Wars episodes in one place and make it easier for people there. And you guys have really responded to that as well. You've gone over there. We've got 9 star reviews so far, and we've got 7 written reviews. And I have to say, Norm, I'm very proud to say this. Every single star review and or rating for either one of the feeds, all 5 stars. And if you read through what people have said, every once in a while, if I'm just feeling down, I'll go and read those reviews. And people have been so kind, and I really appreciate it, because I know that you're taking time out of your day to do that. and I know that it's sometimes annoying to go through the process, but your words and your encouragement not only help find new listeners, but they also help the people who do the shows behind the scenes as we work behind the mic for you guys. Your kind words give us fuel to keep giving you the best content ever, and that is my goal for the 602 Club as we continue on into the next year. Already have amazing things planned for you guys, and I hope that more than anything, you'll just keep listening.
Well, absolutely. I agree with you 100%, and I think it's really important that we make that connection with our listeners, and those listeners have a voice, and that voice can be heard through the star ratings and through our responses here on the show. As a matter of fact, one of the reasons why I became part of the network here on Trek FM is because I had an opportunity to be able to express my fandom through making these ratings on iTunes and through the Babel Conference, our dedicated Facebook listeners page. But more importantly, if you feel like you want to even express yourselves that much further, and you can do so in a very important way. You can help us support the network through a program that we use here called Patreon. And that's, I kind of outlined my steps of helping Trek FM through one, starting to be a reviewer and starting to send in reviews and then posting on Facebook. But I wanted to take it a little bit further. I wanted to be a little bit more vocal because I love and appreciate what we do on the network. And if you ever get a chance to come behind the scenes with us through the network, through Patreon, and through some of the programs that we have there, you'll really get a fantastic opportunity to understand what it really takes to put on a podcast. It's a very interesting, very complicated, and very challenging form of medium. And we do it because we love bringing all this content to you, because you are fans. It's like sitting down with an immediate and instant friend talking to you about the stuff that we love. I mean, how many times have you like turned and say, like, you know what, I wish I could talk to somebody about Star Trek. I wish I could talk to somebody about this, that, or the other thing. Something that interests you. Movies, James Bond, Star Wars, Firefly, Babylon 5, Battlestar Galactica, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Monty Python, whatever it is. You want to be able to do that with somebody, because there's nothing like having a great conversation with a drink, without a drink, with extra friends, with just somebody who you know and trust and can confide with and be yourself with and share that passion. That's the reason why we do this. And thank you so much, each and every one of you, who put that in written form on iTunes for everybody to read, because your review validates what we do.
Man, I could not have said it better myself. And, you know, what's been great about this is some of my best friends these days, and just people that I get to talk to, honestly, every single day, have come through working on Trek FM and come through the 602 Club. Norm, that's how we met. Mm-hmm. That's how I met John Mills, you know, Bruce Gibson, all of these amazing people that have come into my life. Andy, these are just incredible people. John Champion. I mean, the list goes on. All the girls from Educating Geeks. Right. The list is endless, it seems like. Right. And all that came from this. And so before we get too long-winded, drum roll, please. And everybody, I want you to know, Norm is looking. He can see that I'm not peeking. I'm not looking.
Not at all.
And all right, we're gonna pick out a winner here, and the winner is Scott Gill.
That's, congratulations, Scott!
Yeah, congratulations to Scott. That is S C O T T, and then there was a space G I L. That's Scott Gill. So Scott, you're the winner. I would really appreciate it. We'll also, of course, put this on the Babel Conference, but please contact us at trek.fm/contact. Choose the show, the 602 Club, and write me your information. I'll need your address and your email address, of course, so that I can send you the gift card, and then so Norm can send you the USS Vengeance. Really excited. Scott, as well, we will also set up the opportunity for you to come on the 602 Club and talk about your favorite geek things. So everyone, thank you so much for all that you do, because without you, it just wouldn't be possible.
Yeah, congratulations, Scott, and thank you for sending in your review. Obviously, that it's so important to us, as Matt said, and I absolutely 100% agree with just how much support each one of these reviews gives us. And thank you for listening, and continue to listen and inspire your friends to listen. If you say, hey, you know what? There's a show. What, we have 20 different shows here on the network, so there's something for you. There's something for your fans and something for your friends to listen to. And this is something that it's just, you know, I'm going to steal a line from Casablanca. I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, Scott. And yeah, get that information to us. We're going to send you out your goodies. You can, heck, you can post those on the Babel Conference for us, you know, once you get them. And you can make everybody jealous so they can send in a review for the next time we run one of these fantastic contests. Thanks to all the listeners for your support, and thanks for writing in and helping make this review contest a huge success for Matthew and the 602 Club.
Norm, everybody is coming in for the show, so I think we should get out of here.
You know, I only have one request. Please don't give Ruby back the hat, because when she puts the hat back on, it hides all those luscious ginger curls.
Will do, man.
All right. Thanks, Matthew. Thanks for having me on. And again, congratulations, Scott. Well done, and we can't wait for you to let us know how you enjoy your good stuff.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Welcome, everyone, to Trek FM's local watering hole, and I am super excited to say that for episode 50. That's right. We have finally made it to episode 50, and okay, so you could probably go to iTunes, and you'd see that we have more than 50 episodes, but we tend to do a lot of supplementals, but this is actually number 50, and I'm really excited to be here, and we're going to talk about something really fun. Before we do that, I'll let everybody know who's here to celebrate the 50th. Norm and I pre-gamed it. We already gave away everything for our contest. But here to talk about our topic tonight, we've got some great guests. Drea, it's so good to have you back in the 602 Club.
Hi, thank you for having me again. I'm so excited to be here and to talk about this because I love space.
Ooh, she gave it away. We're going to talk about The Martian. That's okay.
I always like space. You gave away the title.
Yeah, I did. I'm just so excited. I mean, I like space too. So, in fact, one of the biggest episodes we ever did on the 602 Club was way back when we talked about Interstellar, and it's been one of the most popular downloads still. So, people like space stuff, and you know, if we're going to talk some space stuff, I need my interstellar buddy, Darren, here with me. Darren, it's great to have you back here on the 602 to talk some more space.
More space. I'm glad I'm not pigeonholed into space. So, you know, there's, well, I guess Star Wars. I guess, actually, now that I think about it, I might be. Oh, no. Well, that's all right. It's a great topic, and I'm very excited to be talking about more space and plausible space and real space. But maybe interspace. Yeah. We should do an interspace.
Ooh, possible space in our lifetime.
This is so true, and that's one of the things that we will definitely get to here. Before we completely jump into the movie, I wanted to remind everybody, of course, that the 602 Club is part of the Trek FM network, and that means you can find 20 different shows and feeds on iTunes.com/Trek FM. We have so much going on there for everyone. We have podcasts dedicated to every single part of Star Trek. I'm really not sure there isn't a part that isn't covered right now. So if you like Star Trek, we are definitely the place for you. And then, of course, with the 602 Club and its special Star Wars feed, we have all things geeky covered as well. You can check everything out, like I said, on iTunes.com/Trek FM and Trek.fm. That is our website. You can see all the things that we're doing. Check us out with Twitter at Trek FM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek FM. If you'd like to leave us some feedback, send us some contact. Go to trek.fm/contact. We'd love to hear your thoughts on The Martian or anything else, maybe something you'd just like to hear us talk about on the 602 Club. You can also find us on the Babel Conference, which is the listeners only discussion group. Just go to Facebook, type Babel into the search field, or if you go to any of the show pages at trek.fm and click discussion on the menu bar, it'll take you right there and you can join and talk to all the different listeners we have here on the network about all the things that we do here on Trek FM. Now, guys, like I said, we are going to be talking about The Martian. And I was trying to think back about a year ago this time, a friend of mine from Dallas Facebook messaged me and said, "Hey, I think you'd like this book. It's called The Martian. Check it out." Well, honestly, I only got around to reading it about 3 or so months ago. But this book has been around for a really long time. So before we even got to the movie, because the book has become such a big seller and so many people read it, I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the book first and have you guys read it. And let's talk about kind of what our thoughts were about the book, because that's really going to color, I think, where we go into the movie.
Oh, look, Matt Damon's faces.
Oh, look, we're holding up our copies.
Aw, nobody can see it, but it's so cute. They have matchy copies.
And obviously, this entire podcast will be heavily spoiler for the book and the movie, which are both really good. So it's totally worth it to pause this, read and watch, and then come back, because it's such a great story. I devoured this book in about 2 days. I think eight hours. You know, it was like 4 hours of one day and like 5 hours the second day. I just could not put it down. I put it down because I had to sleep, which is something Watney doesn't do a lot of.
But don't you have kids too? Like,
you know, it didn't matter. It was all about finding out how Watney was doing. It was, I was such a good book. And not just because I needed to read it because we were going to do a podcast on it, but even more so, just, yeah, I could not put it down. And it was, I love the format of it. It's as we were discussing, you know, on the other side of the room, it's a perpetual captain's log. It's all about Watney's logs on different souls, which I like, again, technically, because it's not days, because it's not Earth. So a soul is basically one, you know, one turn of Mars is how they call it. But yeah, and it's got tension. It's got a lot of great science in it. You know, they definitely did their homework. Not Andy Weir. Yes. Andy Weir did his homework for sure. And yeah, I could not recommend this highly enough. If you enjoy, you know, if you enjoy Jurassic Park, if you enjoy, you know, just thriller kind of novels, it's not super, I mean, it's like 400 something pages, but you could read this in a week or on a single vacation, and, you know, it's travel size and it's great. I think I've known some people who've listened to the audiobook, which they really enjoyed, and now a major motion picture. So there's no reason not to read The Martian.
Darren, how much are you getting paid?
You know, Annie and I went to college. No, I'm just kidding. Totally did not. But no, it's, you know, you're wondering who's going to be the advocate of this story, you know, and I think you found it.
So my husband listened to the audiobook, and he's pretty particular on what he listens to. He got done and he's like, "I know how much you like Michael Crichton, so why don't you give this a shot? Because it's a little less sciencey and a little more space sciencey." And I was like, "All right, yeah, I like space." So I was like, "Yeah, yeah, I'll pick up a copy at some point." And we're walking through the grocery store and he runs over and he's like, "Look, it's 40% off. Here, you're getting this one." And he just like puts it in the grocery cart, and I was like, "Okay." And then I started taking a van pool group to work. So I live like 45 minutes from where I work, so it's a good long commute. And I take it 2 days a week, and I read it in those 2 days in the van pool. So yeah, it's a pretty quick read. And when I got to work, I was like, "Man, now I have to go to work and I can't keep reading what happens to Mark Watney." And it's hard. It was too hard. I tried to like cue up the audiobook to find the right place between them. But it was like, this is too much work. I'll just read on the way home. So yeah, but I really enjoyed the book too. I liked how much science there was. So, cause I think nowadays we skim over a lot of that for the sake of they think you attract a greater audience by dumbing it down. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And I really love Michael Crichton, and it reminded me a lot of his sort of work. So when you say Jurassic Park, I was like, yep, totally can see it, or Timeline or something like that. So
yeah, I heard someone when they were told like, "Well, what is it about?" And they said, "You know that scene in Apollo 13 where there's like all the nerds in the back and they dump out all the stuff and they have to figure out how to make the air filter? It's an entire movie like that scene, basically. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty true.
It is pretty much Apollo 13 on steroids. I mean,
Apollo 13
that's
to Mars.
Exactly.
It's Apollo 13 to Mars meets, what was it, Castaway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, with serious long-distance texting. So, I mean, I don't even want to know what those rates are. You know, this will be very interesting. I think anybody who listens to the 602 Club knows I am almost always the ardent cheerleader of whatever we are talking about. But I am not a huge fan of the book. I like it, but all the things you mentioned about the science is what I get lost in, and not because it's over my head or anything like that. It's just because it's kind of that thing, if you've watched Star Trek Voyager and they start technobabbling a lot and you don't really care about the storyline because they haven't given you enough reason to care about the characters. And that's kind of Mark Watney to me, especially in the book, is a pawn for him to move around from one problem to the next. He's not really a real person. Like, it doesn't feel like that to me in the book. He is a prop for all the science. And to me, if you're going to write a book with a character, I need to care about the character so I care whether he lives and gets through all of the different things going on. And it's fun, again, it's fun to kind of watch him get through everything and figure it out. That's great. I mean, he sciences the out of things. But he's not like super relatable. I mean, he's just a wisecracking smartass all the time. Nothing's serious to him. So I never feel like he's going to die, one, because I wouldn't be reading this book or watching this movie if he's really going to die. So there's no real danger. And at least, this is just my feelings. So I don't take this to anybody who's listening that this is overarching for everyone. But that was just my feeling reading it. Like, I kind of feel like I'm watching a technobabbly episode of Star Trek where I haven't been made to care about the characters enough to really connect. So I'm like, oh, what's going to happen to Mark? You know, which is kind of weird because you spend all this time with this guy alone on this planet. And like you said, Darren, he's giving his perpetual captain's log, Stardate Soul 95.2.
I'd say like 7/8 of the book is him making a log.
But you're not really learning anything personal about him. And two, like, there's no real strong reason for him to get back to Earth either. Like, it's not like he has a family, really, that he's trying to get back to, like, you know, kids or anything. Like, so there's not that...
Except that it's a planet that supports human life.
There's just not that, you know, that human connection, though, other than just, I want to get off this planet because I don't want to die here alone.
And see, I don't need that. Like, I know enough wisecracking, smart mouth people in real life that I'm like, all right, I'm on board with that. And the fact that he does science the crap out of it, to me, already makes him, like, that's very human of him. The basic human instinct to survive supersedes, like, anything else. I think it just makes him so human that I don't need to know any more about him to relate to him. So for me, a lot of the, and I think sometimes in movies and books, they get so wrapped up in the human inner relationships, and, you know, he has a girl back home he's going home to and stuff, and, you know, they touch on it maybe a little more in the movie. I definitely agree with that, but for me, sometimes that stuff's distracting, so I didn't need it, and I don't even think I noticed it wasn't there until you mentioned it. So
I
can totally see where you're coming from, but I guess I just don't need it.
No. And I don't want to present like that I'm right or anybody else is wrong, because what I really think is that, you know, anytime I'm watching something, it's always about character and it's always about the story. And that's a shortcoming of the book and the movie. But that doesn't mean it's bad, because tons of people love it. It's just my personality and what I'm looking for when I go into something. And so when I didn't get that, I was just disappointed, because if that part had been there, I think I would have, like, been the cheerleader. I would have totally loved this book in a way that I just don't connect with it in any emotional way. And so it's like, that's frustrating for me.
It is an interesting choice how they start the in media res, you know, where it's like I like how they start, but it is a good point where a traditional story structure would have you meeting the characters and, you know, you feel the tension build of, we know something's going to go wrong, because you kind of know the general idea on the back of the book or something, and then it goes wrong. But this starts with, I mean, the first log entry is after, you know, he wakes up stranded on Mars and everyone's left. And so, yeah, it's like, well, who is this guy? What, you barely know his name, let alone. So I can definitely see that difficulty of forming that connection. But I kind of also see it, that's how it was like for me, was I just kind of was just already along for the ride, you know, and part of me was kind of glad that he didn't have like a wife and kids at home or like a dying mother, because we get that so many times. And then it's all about like, well, I got to get home to not disappoint. That's the wrong word. But like, that's what's driving him. And it seemed like the message they were trying to say was, you know, the desire and the will to survive in insurmountable odds is such a human characteristic. And I know we'll get into that later, but that was a good point, because I honestly didn't even notice how little we were getting fed of Watney. It was so much, you know, oh, well, what kind of music does he not like because of what music he's forced to listen to? You know, we aren't told what music he likes, I don't think, in the entire book. You know, it's so it is very reactionary. I do see that. But it just, I guess because it was presented that way the entire story, it just became how we got to know this character.
Well, that is one thing that Interstellar was criticized for, was people didn't like the characters. They thought they were kind of cold. Christopher Nolan gets knocked for that in his films. Hmm. All of them, honestly. I don't see that. I think he ends up writing really good, strong characters. But it's this is the movie where I feel like that's the case, where it's like it's a cold character, because there's not that. And I feel like the book and the movie,
it's very cold on Mars.
Yes, it is, Matt, very cold on Mars. And there's no one there to hear you scream. The air is so thin.
Because they left.
Yeah.
There's enough morphine, that's right. Though, don't worry.
But yeah, I feel like if you had done the thing where you start the book or the movie with them like on the way to Mars and all that kind of stuff, and set all that up, then you really do care about all the characters involved, from the people back at NASA, from the people on, you know, the Ares to Mark, and there is much more of a connection. And really, you don't honestly have to change the story that much. Mark doesn't have to have somebody to get home to, but just by having that connection with the relationships, and it doesn't even have to be love relationships, it's just, you know, the people there and all that, and what it's taking to get people there, to me, that would make it's a 2.5-hour movie then, and it's a 500-page book, but to me, that's a better story. But again, that's just me, so.
Yeah, and I didn't mind, because I feel like they did that throughout the book. You maybe didn't get set up with that, but I mean, you learn throughout the book that, like, humor is his defense mechanism. He was he was selected for this, not just because he's a good botanist, but because his personality was uplifting, and he was supposed to be the person that kept the crew from getting into that, like, horrible space depression, or whatever you want to call it. You know, so and, you know, he doesn't like disco. He acts like the Fonz in the photo. Like, I feel like you get to learn and attach yourself to Mark as you read the book, which is very, you're totally spot on. It's very different than most storytelling. Like Harry Potter, they tell you right from the beginning, this is the chosen child, like first chapter, 5 pages in. And this one, you're 5 or 6 chapters in before you realize, like, he's a botanist, right. You know?
That's going to be handy.
Especially on a planet where nothing grows.
Now you can grow your food.
Can you imagine if he was like the, I don't know, like the pilot? So, if you got a spaceship, I can fly it, but
other than that,
they already took the spaceship, so, well, you can...
Well, and imagine being the crew and abandoning your pilot, true. And be like, well, what?
Oh, that's our one. That's our one. That's our one for the episode.
There's my one.
We gotta keep it.
Yeah, R2-D2 will come in there and he will bleep that out for us. Yeah, which R2 knows a lot about is bleeping. But okay, so this is one thing that Hollywood does all the time. You know, it's a best-selling book. We better turn that into a movie. I mean, it doesn't always mean that it's gonna be a winner. City of Bones, anybody?
The Lovely Bones.
Yeah, well, that too. It's not. There's a lot of books that get turned into movies that either need to have been done better or should just never have been touched.
I kind of wish, you know, often when thinking of like a story idea, I think too often it's like, oh, it's got to be a movie. Well, but some stories would be much better as like a miniseries or as like a TV show. Like one of the best examples in the space genre is From the Earth to the Moon, which is an incredible, you know, HBO series about, you know, our early history of space flight. And it's like, I can't imagine them trying. I mean, they kind of did in like The Right Stuff. Like The Right Stuff's like the movie version of From the Earth to the Moon. And it is a good movie, but it's like you just can't even get close to the amount of story and the characters and the details from 12, you know, HBO episodes versus one movie. And I think, you know, Hollywood sometimes puts itself in that movie box where it's like, well, you can't make Lord of the Rings extended editions of everything. Like you know, we've shied way away from the intermission. So it's like you're limited to this 2.5 hour box. And it's just, you got to be really selective of what you put it in.
Not anymore, Darren, because you can just split that last book into two movies, God. Even if you don't need to.
Well, when you write The Martian 2, I mean, Not Again, that's the title I've decided.
No, it needs to be The Martian 2, Oops, okay. I Did It Again.
And then he's stuck with Britney Spears songs. That's the track that's left with him.
90s pop the entire time.
Oh, jeez.
Day 93, geez. I'm ending it all. Britney's pop, I can't take it anymore.
Andy Weir, are you listening to this? It's brilliant.
No, it's not. Don't do that.
But
Andy.
Then the line is bop, that's my jam.
but I've totally forgotten my point, but that's all right. I don't think it was that good of a point.
No. Okay, so obviously, you know, when something is this big, it's gonna get turned into a movie. And honestly, I think a lot of this book and the way that Andy does write it, it's got a lot of brevity to it. It's fast paced, and you spend this time with a guy named Mark, who's the only person on Mars, and he spends a lot of time talking to himself as he's recording these logs out loud. So as we talked about before the show on the other side of the drink, we're not even in his head, like, right. You know, something like Katniss in the Hunger Games, where he's actually just talking out loud to himself all the time because he's recording this log. So Andy's already figured out how the movie, you know, makers make this film. And honestly, I mean, you know, you read those books and you're like, oh, that's you could make a movie out of this in 5 seconds. And so you can understand, honestly, this actually was ready made to be made a film, I think, when you look at the book and then you like, oh, yeah, you can totally do this.
But you obviously need to strike a balance. And that's what I was looking at when I saw the movie was, you know, again, we talked about 7/8 of this book is a mission log. And so I'm like, well, I don't want to see a movie where literally every, you know, it's Blair Witch or Big Brother, like everything is literally him looking into a camera talking. But I think they did a good balance of, you know, there's him just walking around doing things. It's a movie. We're seeing him giving his logs and then back on NASA, you know, which I think that was the other 1/8 of the movie or 1/8 of the book, you know, was what's going on there. How are they dealing with it? And I think they did a good job of, I was worried that it'd be too much, you know, GoPro footage, but it wasn't, at least how I felt.
Well, and in the book, a lot of his logs are him describing things he's tried.
Right.
So, you know, in the book,
show,
in
don't
the
tell.
Movie, it, he, yeah, they're showing you these things, and they're showing you that him doing them versus him sitting down at
That's
the station
true.
At the log at the end of the soul and being like, hey, so I tried to grow potatoes today and I blew up the hab. Like, he you see him blow up the hab instead, and then he's like, well, that sucked, you know, which also helps too, because you get to see it,
experience it,
versus having him tell you it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, and I think everybody's glad that we got to see him take freeze-dried poo and turn that into fertilizer. I'm really glad that that was shown so in depth to us in the film. It's well done, Ridley Scott. Oh, I really appreciated that.
I actually appreciate the brevity of that, because that's like six chapters of the book.
Yeah.
It's him describing the smell and how it worked. And hey, when I took the rover to Pathfinder, I had to keep crapping in a bag. And you're like, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, TMI, Mark. TMI.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, one thing that's not, I don't think is mentioned in the book or the movie, but I hope so. Did he have like a little SD card or something he put in the pocket of his suit that had these logs? Or are they literally just sitting on Mars? Because I don't think they ever covered if he brought his logs with him. I really hope he did, because that would just be sad.
I got the feeling like his laptop or something he must have taken, that he had something that he, because obviously
put on a USB stick or something.
I mean,
or there's some way that once he got in contact with NASA, he could upload them to,
but he only had the
NASA
text upload, and they were all video. I don't know. I just, they never covered it in either medium. So I was just like, that'd be really sad. You do all this. I mean, he couldn't take really anything with him, but I'm like, USB drive, micro SD, something in a pocket. Like, I hope he found a way in this fictional story.
Hey,
so
let's go to Mars and find out. We should go check.
Well, I'm sure that life will find a way, as we learned from Jurassic Park, somehow, even on Mars. okay, for you guys transitioning from book into movie, what did you end up thinking about the movie as compared to the book and just as a movie in general? Because obviously, so many people have read this book, they're comparing the two in their heads. So first, how does it work compared to the book? And then just as a movie, if you hadn't read the book, do you think you still would have really connected?
So my husband was really upset at the amount of science they had to cut from the movie. And I had to remind him that we want people to see the movie. And point out to him that if he hadn't known that it existed in the book, would he be missing it from the movie? And he was like, well, no. So I think it still worked and it still flowed, taking out a lot of the detail, like the six chapters of poop talk and, you know, some of the changes they made worked for the most part. One of the things that we were talking about earlier that I really kind of missed in the movie that I felt was so strong in the book was the tension back on Earth and the tension at NASA between all the bigwigs and everyone involved, and like that feeling of like desperation and urgency. I guess I didn't get it as strong in the movie as I wanted it. You got bits and pieces of it, like the Rich Parnell where he's like passed out in his coffee and he like falls over and all that. Like, that's a pretty accurate portrayal of someone who's just to the point of exhaustion. But in the book, the PR lady who Kristen Wiig plays is supposed to just be a total, total like monster. She's just mean and bitchy and like she's, that's just who she is in the book. And she's supposed to be a hard person. And in the movie, she's very kind and supportive. And it's just, they made some changes to some of the characters back at NASA that didn't quite make that like the conflict there as strong as it was in the book. So I kind of missed that, because I feel like that conflict and them trying to hide it from him like added this dynamic and this sort of like, ooh, feeling. And I don't think we got that as much in the movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. Not Claire. That was Annie, the head of PR. Yeah, I thought she'd be played much more like Claire was in Jurassic World, where she's just in charge. She knows. This felt like it was her second week on the job in the movie. Like,
yeah, she was a PR person who never gave a PR speech.
But overall, I mean, yes, there's some science parts that were kind of, you know, not NASA-fied, but Hollywood-fied. The windows on the Hermes, oh my gosh, don't get me started on the windows. Those windows were huge. That was ridiculous. You would not have those giant windows, but you need your shot of them in their gym that's giant with their lounge chairs that take up but yes, there were some things that bothered me, mostly on the Hermes, I think that was the other big difference between the book and the movie, again, is that tension. like you talked about. I think the book really handled the tension well. There's a great one of my favorite parts is they start intercutting about this piece of canvas that is eventually going to be built around the airlock, which fails, which explains why it failed. You know, in the movie, it's just, oh, and the airlock failed. Darn, you know, sorry.
Which,
so in the book, is you know, you're reading and all of a sudden it intercuts to, you know, fabric piece J48 was installed on such and such, and you're like, oh, why are they talking about this fabric? Like, this is going to be important. And then they not talk for it for like three chapters, and they'd come back. And so you felt this tension building of something's going to happen, it's not going to be good. And then when it does, you know, it's... So, yes, I obviously, I'm like, I have no idea how you would show that, you know, on a movie with time. I mean, there's just no time. But, you know, so there's the differences like that. There's some of the failures that they just cut out because of time. Like, his rover doesn't flip, you know, in the end. I think that would have just been like, come on. Like, one too many, you know, problems thrown at him. Which, in the book, is great because we can write as many pages as you want. But in a movie, like, you know, okay, he just needs to get... And he has got so much work to do, and we got to finish up the movie, you know. And, you know, one difference in the movie, which was funny because it's almost highlighted in the book, which almost makes me wonder that's why they did it. But in the very end, he talks about if this were a movie, everyone would have been in the airlock, and that would have been high fives all around. But it didn't pan out that way. Well, in the movie, everyone is in the airlock, and there are high fives all around. So, But overall, I think it was a good translation, you know, from a 400, 500-page book to a 2.5-hour movie. You know, I think they did a really good job keeping what they needed. I really liked the visual duality of the people down in NASA pulling out the Pathfinder and, you know, it responding how his was responding. Like, that's exactly what they would do. Someone did point out, though, that anyone who worked on Pathfinder would probably be 80, you know, by this time. So that was a little off, but you know, whatever. It's a movie, you know. It's not a big deal.
People are living longer by
okay,
then.
Okay, okay. Is this Chekhov and McCoy?
Maybe he's the new like 60.
They had all that work done, you know.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked that part. You know, with Pathfinder and I think there was one other. Oh yeah, when they're drilling into the rovers. So yeah, just lots of great science. You know, a lot of people, you know, working together, you know, and we'll get to the characters, you know, next, but I enjoyed the film having seen it. I guess that was almost the only disappointment in the movie is that because I had read the book, you know, there, and because I feel even if, well, I guess it's hard to say because I read the book before I saw the movie, I didn't feel that tension because I knew, you know, what was going to happen. Like, when he gets in the airlock and it's, like, a long shot, I'm like, okay, this is where that part happens, you know. But, so I don't know, it'd be curious to find out, people talk on the Babel Conference, you know, if you just saw this movie but didn't read the book, how did it feel tension-wise? Because I think tension is a very core aspect of this story.
Another big thing that they left off of the movie that kind of, they sort of briefly addressed at the end, if you knew what it was the agreement to borrow the Tangjin, the Chinese probe, was that they would have a Chinese astronaut on Ares 4
yeah.
or 5. And you see him, but it's never discussed. So it's just like, oh, the Chinese are being so nice. And you're like,
right.
It's not exactly how that went down. But like, there sort of is a quid pro quo illusion, but maybe not as much as they think there was. And it's kind of like, it's kind of this weird relationship with the Chinese from there. So that was also a little bit off for me. It's almost like you had to have read the book to sort of know what was going on with that.
And they could have shot that line, but just cut it for time. I mean, that totally sounds like something that they would have put in, but then like, well, you know, we don't have the minute, you know.
We just need to cut something, yeah.
We don't have the time to talk about time, Darren. We just don't have the time.
I don't think we should talk about crashing ships right now, especially with the Martian.
No, not at all. I think specifically with the Chinese thing, I do feel like the movie made them more heroic than they actually come across in the book, because in the book they're trying to get what they can out of, you know, I mean, it's much more of we'll give you this, but you're going to give us this. Exactly. It's a much more political situation and much more realistic in that sense. Whereas in the book, they just seem very altruistic all of a sudden.
Maybe Hollywood wants us to go program. Well in China, in the China market.
Exactly. Yeah, it makes sense.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
So, but it is very different from the book. Now, I have to say, you know, for me, usually I love the book more than I like the movie. But here I like the movie more. And I really like the movie because what it does for the character of Watney, and since so much of it's showing us, not telling us, the visuals of the toll that this is taking on him really creates that emotional feel that you don't get from the book. And I like that a lot. And even just...
Are you talking about the emaciated butt? Yeah.
That okay. part, but what I'm really thinking of is just the way that Matt Damon... The way that he plays the role, and like, you know, when he loses the seal and loses all of his growing potatoes, and he's counting, and just the way that he's, you can tell he's so frustrated. He's so mad at what just happened. And everything is going through his mind, but you don't need him talking to you. He's just, you feel the emotion of that moment because of the way that Matt Damon is portraying Mark Watney, and better done than it is in the book to actually make me care about the character. And that's what I really like, is that I care about the character here in the movie, whereas I didn't really in the book. And I really appreciated that because it made me like the movie more. And so all the things that they cut or whatever, that, you know, I'm like, that makes sense. It's a movie. You can't put in every single catastrophe that was in this book, because there were a lot of them. And like you were saying, Darren, we're not going to make a movie with an intermission right. here, especially when it belabors the point, because we all know he's going to get home. We're not going to go to this movie and watch this dude die.
Although reading the
same
book,
thing with, I don't.
I mean, reading the book, I
that.
Did not ever feel
okay,
like
wait,
he was
wait,
gonna
wait,
die
wait,
home.
Hold
like,
on.
Like that was a given.
You went to Gravity and you thought Sandra Bullock was going to die.
I just don't think about it.
Yes.
It's just it just comes
yes,
in.
Yes, I don't let go of any possibility.
Okay.
The only person I know who won't die is Obi-Wan Kenobi in the prequels. Okay, it's the only person. I know for sure he's going to make it.
Hey, he's not even going to die when Vader cuts him down. He's going to become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. So, I mean, Vader loses twice. Sorry, buddy. That's a whole other podcast.
Vader.
Yeah, there you go. But yeah, this is, I think it's a great time to move into the characters. I think Matt Damon, obviously, is the best choice for this role, because really Mark Watney is just his character from Good Will Hunting. But oh wait, yeah, he's really smart and he's really sarcastic. Yep, same character
on Mars. So
it's,
Good
so
Will
it's
Hunting
come
on
full
Mars,
circle for
saying.
It. Yeah, exactly. It's Good Will Hunting on Mars.
They did say, the author, Andy Weir, did come out and say at some point in time, his first pick for Watney was Chris Pratt. And it was before Pratt, like, blew up. Because I guess they've been in talks to do this for a while. And he always thought it was Chris Pratt. And I'm kind of glad it wasn't. I kind of really liked Matt Damon.
Matt Damon has...
And that's saying something, because I really
maturity.
Like Chris Pratt.
He's just because he's kind of done this longer. You know, I think, like, Jason Bourne, like, breaking out, like, kind of Matt Damon would not have worked as well as this. But... You know, plus he's been in, you know, he's already been in space. Yeah.
He's been in space, so he's used to this. Someone said we should watch Interstellar and The Martian really closely to see if it's the same spacesuit.
No,
if Hollywood
it is
like
not.
Try to save money and make like
not.
The,
no,
same
not the same
spacesuit.
No, not the same spacesuit. It is interesting though, because I think you hit on something, guys, that him being older is important, because, you know, if you do Chris Pratt, he just seems too young to be a guy that's this accomplished. And, you know, when you look at all of, I mean, I remember growing up, you know, you look at all those astronauts and they're people who are farther along in their career, and they're astronauts because they made it that far. You know, you're not getting like 20-year-old kids, 25-year-old kids, you know, being astronauts.
I think what you're meaning, and what maybe I would go with Matt Damon for, is the maturity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He carries the emotion in a way that an experienced actor can.
Yeah. He makes a joke about boobs, and I don't instantly go to, like, 15-year-old boy. I go to, like, man trying to lighten his own mood, because he honestly could just die here any day now. Yeah.
And boobs are always funny. So, apparently.
And boobs are always funny.
Thanks, Chris Pratt.
I mean, when you're about to die, it's a good joke to make you feel better. Unless, I guess, you're a straight woman, and then you're just, it's not a joke. So, anyway. That's a whole other subject. Man, we are really
But the characters of the Martian are a great aspect of this movie, wouldn't you say, Matt?
I would. I would, Darren. So some of the other characters and their actor portrayals, what did you guys think? I mean, we've got some great actors. I mean, Jeff Daniels being in the role, and I've just been watching Newsroom. It's so great to see him. I love Jessica Chastain, and Kristen Wiig being serious. It's unusual, but she pulls a Sean Bean in here. I mean, what can be better than Sean Bean in a movie?
Sean Bean in a movie where there's a Lord of the Rings joke and he doesn't die.
He doesn't die.
Yeah. Yeah. If you've been an astronaut, no way. I'm sorry, Sean. You're not going to make it.
He's done. Sean Bean as Mark Watney. Wash my hands of that away.
5-minute movie.
I don't know, right? He's the first astronaut to die on Mars, and then we get Mark Watney. I cannot remember the actor's name who plays Vincent, which, by the way, it really bothers me. They changed his name. There was no reason to change his name. Change it from Vanquette.
He was Indian in
the book. Yeah, Vanquette Vincent. Yeah. And they made him a Hindu Baptist in the movie.
Well, I mean, I really like that actor. I mean, he's been in Serenity and a bunch of great stuff. But I've heard in the audiobook it was...
When he's about to be Black Panther.
Oh, is he going to be Black Panther? Oh my gosh, that's going to be great.
Yeah.
That's going to be so good.
He's awesome, and I love him. But it was supposed to be an Indian character, and they picked an African-American character. And apparently, that really also kind of didn't sit well with the author, because he intentionally made that character Indian to be representative of what he felt like NASA is, and they changed it, and he was like, well, that's all gone now. But even so, they could have kept the name. Like, it's not going to kill you to keep the name. But yeah, I thought he was really phenomenal.
I'm going to go with, I don't quote me on that, but
let's just call him the believer and move on.
But there was an all-star cast. I mean, they were just, from Matt Damon to, they just kept popping up. It's like, oh, there's Sebastian Stan, the Winter Soldier. Oh, there's, Michael Peña from, he was in Ant-Man recently. You know, there's Jeff Daniels. And it's just, they just kept rolling in. It was a really good cast.
Whoever played Eddie Vo or whatever is a really well-known Chinese actor too, I think. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
The
I love the little guys holding up the sign. They were like, say no.
Giving him his talking voice.
My favorite was the one that just said, like, no extension, no. And it's so true. It's so true.
By the way, if I ever make it big, just know I totally have someone sitting on the other side always of the cue cards. With all my talking points.
the talking points.
Oh. Well, I thought it was interesting, too, because, I just saw Fan4Stick. And, recently, not so recently, but anyway, I saw that back this summer and, Kate Mara had absolutely nothing to do in that movie. And she had a little bit more to do in this. I don't feel like she's getting the roles as quality as what she had in House of Cards. But it was nice to see her be a little bit more utilized in this film than where she was just really sidelined in Fantastic Four.
And an interesting random parallel, I recently watched Deep Impact on Netflix or something, back when we went into space and it was really real. Jeez.
Oh, that movie is so factually correct. It's incredible. That and Armageddon together.
No,
it's like a
no.
Yeah, it's like a duo of awesomeness.
That's the thing the Martian was missing:
was
him watching these movies and just like laughing his butt off.
Was Liv Tyler crying when Mark Watney left?
The only thing I was referring to was how in The Martian, you have, like you said, Mackenzie Davis as Mindy Park, the satellite coordinator, where she discovers, you know, and then she gets promoted kind of to, now she's the head satellite wrangler. It did feel similar to the news anchor, you know, in Deep Impact, where she is that one to kind of get the story, and then she becomes that human face, you know, for the tragedy. I mean, again, it really has nothing to do with one another, but just something that stand out.
No. Although Mackenzie Park did a great job being the awkward satellite. Yeah. Like, just enough awkwardness that you're like, all right, I believe that you're really uncomfortable, but not so much that it becomes comedic. Or you're like, okay, Saturday Night Live, where did you come from?
Yeah, the comedic was with the stapler scene where he's all like, who are you again?
Yes.
Yeah. Who are you again? I'm Kenny Sanders. Awesome. I'm the head of NASA. Oh, okay. And it's just like, you're so fired, dude.
The best part is when it's over, yeah. He just goes, just
like,
get out.
It's like, this room is way above your pay grade, buddy. Just get out.
And that's where we got our Lord of the Rings joke, too. So that was awesome.
Yeah, that was
in the book,
really,
which is great. I love that they keep parts from
in
like
the
that.
Book. Yeah. And I actually, that is one of the few parts that I liked better in the movie than I did in the book. Because in the book, she's like, I can see none of you got laid in high school or college or whatever. And you're like, dude, just because I like Lord of the Rings doesn't mean anything, you know? It's like, you take a little bit of offense to it in the book. And in this one, she's just like, wow.
Now I want to know, is did they cast Sean Bean solely because that joke was in the book? And they're like, you know what would be great? I mean, it doesn't really even matter, but we need to cast Sean Bean as Mitch Henderson because he's going to be in that, and we could totally make an even bigger Lord of the Ring joke.
And I'm so glad that they did.
You know,
I'm so
glad they did. I want to believe that's real. So and so, I'm given empirical evidence.
I don't
want
to live in a
otherwise.
World where they didn't decide to do that because it would
it's
be
a part of my
joke.
Head canon. Yeah. It's a part of my head
it's
canon.
But I'm going to be Galafagul. So, you know.
You mean Glorfindel?
He couldn't put it. Yeah. That's so funny.
That was so funny. That was really good.
How did they get? You know, that scene probably had a million retakes because they probably couldn't keep their face straight.
And then Sean Bean's like, "No, this is how it's said."
Yeah,
because he knows. And even he's got to know.
And even I mean, when Teddy walks almost, in, he knows exactly what's going on, and she's like, "Wow."
I mean, Sean Bean. I know they wouldn't do it, but I was like, "Come on, Sean Bean, be like, well, then I'm gonna be Boromir." I'm like, just. Make that last little step, but you know, that would have been too much.
It was good. That was really good.
The I have to say, you know what? I think the casting in this movie really is fantastic, and it is one of the things that makes the movie so enjoyable. Is that everybody really is? I think on top of their game, and there's nobody here who's giving, you know, just a lame performance. Everybody's engaged, and you buy everybody in their roles, and that's what I really like, too. And the only thing, again, that I just would have loved having more of is, you know, in the book, you do get the flashbacks to them being on the planet together, Mars together. Yeah. And
that's true.
And I really liked that because, you know, Watney has a good relationship with almost everybody in the crew, and especially the captain, and I think I just would have loved just a little bit more with that. But otherwise, I think it was really great. And, you know, the scenes when they're, you know, Michael Peña is writing him the note back is just, it's so perfect, you know, because he's playing it just the way that you felt like it happened in the book.
In their giant space lounge.
Exactly. I love that space lounge. It's, I want an airy space lounge. I wonder if they call that, like,
the Hermes line. You can get
it's
that
like
Pottery
they took
box.
It right out of 2001 A Space Odyssey, literally.
It's exactly where it came from, yeah. But it looks great. So I wonder if they have a special name for it, like
the 602
you know, circle. The six, yeah, or you know, the circle forward or something. I don't know.
I'm telling you, it's the Hermes line. You can get it at Pottery Barn because apparently they do everything now, including kids, Star
Or maybe
Wars
they
fans.
Call it Olympus, you know, since it's the Aries. So anyway, one of the things that is really interesting about this movie, and obviously us being a Star Trek network, this movie is very much, I mean, geez, they could have had Jack Johnson at the end singing Better Together, because that's exactly what this story is all about, and it's a very Star Trek thing about we are better together. Look at what we can accomplish when you put us all together in a room and we put our heads together. And I think it's, you know, it is something that is important, because when you look at what space travel does and thinking about the bigness of space, it has a way of bringing, I think, people together that might not normally do. And part of that is the fear of the unknown, but part of that is also the adventure of the unknown. And, you know, you think about the random people that would come together to go on expeditions all over the world when we were still really trying to discover our own planet, and how that brought people together. Space is the next thing to do that. And this is for Alice, because she likes it when I just have that thing, you know, like the bigger message. And that's the bigger message, you know, really, of this movie. It's not about the ingenuity of human nature or anything like that. It's when you put people together who wouldn't normally come together. And, you know, they definitely drive that home in the book and in the movie with bringing China in. You know, the fact that they have this that we don't, and they found a way to do something that, you know, we hadn't, and all this stuff. It's a good message, you know, and I think it's very applicable in our world today.
Well, and it almost had sort of, it's weird. It almost had sort of that Doctor Who prequel feel, where whenever you watch Doctor Who, he talks about humanity. He doesn't talk about the United States. He doesn't talk about Great Britain. He talks about humanity as a whole going off and exploring space. And it sort of had that same feel, like the whole of humanity working together, you can successfully do things like a rescue mission to Mars. Whereas if you don't, you get bogged down in the politics of it and the nationality of it, then, you know, he never would have made it back. There's just no way.
Yeah, one of my friends, Sandra, I was talking with her when she read the book, and her favorite part of the book, which I think is literally the last page, which was cut from the...
It was a trailer instead of in the movie.
Oh, is it in the trailer?
It's the trailer.
It is in the trailer.
Oh, okay.
And they didn't include the trailer, it in then, the movie.
Where he's thanking everyone.
Yeah, his big speech at the end.
Yeah. And that's just, I mean, but it would have been nice to keep that in. You know, it's just such a great, where he's just like, we as humanity, we help lost hikers. We help people in disasters with Katrina. There are jerks, but they're mostly, we're a race of people who come to those that are in aid. And, you know, he had billions of people on Earth all rallying around him. And it's true. It's like, I didn't want to think about how much it cost to bring him back. Like, it was a lot of money, but it was the right thing to do.
That was my biggest thing. Like, maybe call me a cynic if you want, but I cannot believe NASA would authorize that much money to bring one astronaut back. Like, I want to believe it's true, but there's a part of me that's like, really? Like, companies all over the world will be like, oh, well, there's only 50 people who died in the Ford Pinto, so we'll just leave the gas tank as is. But NASA will spend billions of dollars to go rescue one astronaut and absolutely nothing else, and waste all their resources to do that. See, it just, that every once in a while in the movie, maybe not so much in the book, but in the movie, every once in a while, I got this inkling of like, how realistic is this?
Well, and that's what I did like. I mean, there is the great scene in the movie that you reference with the book, where you've got Mitch Henderson sitting with Teddy Sanders, and he's saying, look, it's a PR thing. We have to do this, because if we want to keep going to space, we need people to see the good in it and not see the bad. And, you know, we live in a world that is so reactionary that, oh, well, that went wrong, so we better not do that anymore. You know, it's not worth it. It's not worth the investment. And that's kind of where we are now with our space program. We don't have a lot invested in it because nobody wants to think about the future. We're only thinking about the now, and forget, you know, anything else. I mean, space is definitely the final frontier, because we're pretty much locking ourselves on Earth, except for, I mean, you know, we send really cool things out to Pluto and take pictures of it, and it looks real pretty, but we're not actually going out there and exploring. I mean, we haven't been to the moon in, what, 50 years?
Since 72, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, it's been a long time since we've been to the moon. And
it's right there. It's literally right there. It's really close.
It's not going anywhere. It's been in the same orbit of our planet, you know, and we could probably start colonizing. We could do some really cool things there. We could figure some things out. We could practice for when we want to go to Mars, but, you know, eh. So, yeah, what I did like about the movie was the reality of the politics involved of trying to do something this big in the first place. I mean, they're continuing to worry about, okay, yeah, the Ares is built to go through all these missions, but we need public interest to keep us going on these missions, or they're not going to fund us. You know, like, that reality was like, I don't know, it felt like a good slap in the face to us, the person, you know, that all of us in the theater, oh yeah, maybe we should be more interested in exploring our universe.
Well, if you look at, I mean, our own history with our own space race, you know, right after we got to the moon, it just public interest just totally petered off. I mean, who knows if it had stayed at that level, like where we would be by now in 2015, you know,
we'd probably have hoverboards.
And like Jaws 19 would be coming out.
So proud.
But yeah, and it's just, that's a big thing with NASA though. It is how, you know, it's portrayed, how it's viewed, how much money people think they're spending. You know, it's just, for some reason it gets nickeled and dimed, like, or, you know, millioned and thousand, like no other, you know, portion of our government. But that's just the nature of it. I mean, but fortunately we've had a lot of successful things going to Mars. We had, you know, Pathfinder and, you know, like in this movie, you know, Spirit and Opportunity ran for years. I mean, way beyond their operational life. You know, Curiosity's up there now, you know, drilling, finding water and, you know, doing all sorts of fun stuff. And we're still going. We have like the Mars 2020 rover going back up. Shortly, relatively in terms of space travel.
In terms of, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff going on right now. And I hope that, you know, we get we'll see if we can quote him. Buzz Aldrin would always say, we just need to get our ass to Mars.
Yeah. Well, and it really did make me think, you know, space is the final frontier, but there's the wonderful quote from Star Trek of risk is our business. That's NASA's business, is the risk of space travel. And if there's one thing that I'd love to see from all of these films that have come out recently, like, you know, in the last few years, like Gravity and Interstellar and the ideas here and The Martian, it's like when you look at what's being done in this film, it's not that advanced to not think we could do that in the next 20 years if we really put our minds to it. And we get lots of great benefits from the money that we do spend at NASA. It's not wasted. You know, you could probably go look on a bunch of different websites and see all the practical uses for things every single day that have come from NASA research and trying to get to the moon, or, you know, trying to do whatever it is. So there's so much that is... And I think this kind of goes back to our conversation that we had earlier this year about Tomorrowland.
Yeah.
Are we looking towards the future? Are we hopeful? Are
we
going to think
dreaming
about the future? Are we going to stop dreaming? Are we going to, you know, like, that's a sad thing. And I think, you know, lots of kids these days, they're not going to grow up and be like, I want to be an astronaut, because they don't have any astronauts to be like, oh, I want to do that. You know, when I was a kid, we had those people to look up to.
We had Star Trek to inspire us.
Well, and but I'm just thinking, like, I watched the space shuttle go up, you know, a bunch of times. And I also, I remember where I was when the Challenger exploded. I remember standing there with my mouth open, and it was horrible. But at the same time, that didn't deter us from continuing to go and honor those people's lives by continuing the mission. And I think we need to continue that mission. And so I hope, again, for me, that's what I hope to see with this movie. is that people care about space travel again and exploring the universe, because it's not just about now, it's about what's coming next. And while worrying about what's going to come next and trying to figure that out, we're also going to benefit the now. So, I mean, it's a great, you know, circular
thing. It's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
It is.
Yeah, I think I've heard that it's something around a dollar invested in NASA or in space comes back to about $4 worth of innovation. That's not a word. That's
value.
A Disney word. Yeah, value, you know, in economy, in products, in things. And it's more than just Tang. I mean, everyone's like, oh, well, yeah, Velcro and Tang. It's like, but there's, you know, there's...
microchips,
there's mammogram technology that is used, you know, to detect cancer that was developed from optics that went into spacecraft. Like, it's just, it's so interconnected. We're still reaping the seeds that were sown in the 60s, and it's like we have to keep sowing those seeds, and we're just going to have this future boom of technology, but it's going to be so interwoven that unless you point it out, people are going to miss it.
Well, but I mean, I think it's important too that you know, on a smaller scale, you continue to, you know, motivate and inspire kids and, you know, adults alike with this sort of thing. Like my dad does that here. They have a local nonprofit, like they call it a club, but they go out and do stargazing parties at elementary schools, and they do public showings every month. And, you know, it's just important because you don't know how many discoveries are actually made by amateur astronomers that NASA gets to benefit from. And if we continue to bring that interest higher, then that drive is instilled ever since kids are young. So I think it's just one of those things where you got to keep doing it. And, you know, it's one of those things that teeter off, and it's so important that I can't believe we let it teeter off, and, you know, yet our presidential campaigns are billions of dollars, and that's a whole other story, but...
Let's not talk about that pie chart, just
yeah, right. We're not going to bring that pie chart out, but it's just, you know, it's a matter of priorities, and it's totally 100% a PR thing. And, you know, maybe movies like Interstellar and The Martian will help bring space back to the forefront, and just like Jurassic World brought dinosaurs back to the forefront again, you know, maybe it'll re-inspire some of those things that when we were all younger, you know, inspired us. However, the Challenger did nothing for me. I was 3 months old. So
I was gonna say, I was born probably like a month before.
Oh my gosh, I feel so old.
I remember Columbia though.
I remember being so upset recently when they said that they'd launched the last shuttle for an indefinite period of time. I was like, what?
And then
why?
Russia raised the cost of going to the space station. How about that?
Imagine that.
Oh, so surprise.
Yeah, so I mean, I hope movies like The Martian, even if it's not exactly maybe 100% accurate, because we're totally overlooking the fact that there would never be a storm of that capacity on Mars.
That astronaut was untethered on the outside of a spaceship. That would never happen.
The payload opened, or that door, that lock opened, and he wasn't, you know, harnessed to anything.
And then he jumped through the spinning ring.
Yeah.
Untethered.
Yeah.
With no...
Just walked along the outside of the spaceship.
Oh, dear. There's no way. There's absolutely no way.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe...
It was cool, though.
It was pretty cool.
It was just disappointing.
I was so convinced the way they filmed that something was going to happen. Like, so convinced they'd change something and something was going to happen to Beck. I was, like, waiting for it. I was like, oh, all right, nothing. All right.
Well, they're counting down to blowing up the airlock, and he's just, like, casually like, oh, I better put my seatbelt on. And she's like, brace for impact. And I'm like, dude, put your friggin' seatbelt on. What are you doing?
He's the wild man, or the cowboy of the group or whatever.
I guess.
Well, let's hope that for our kids, the only Rocket Man that they know is Elton John. That's not the case. We really don't want that to be where we end up. But I wanted to ask you guys, you know, ratings for The Martian. Where would you put this as? You know, Drea, ladies first, and you know, you can pick the rating Ooh. Scale that we use.
Ugh,
no pressure.
You did this to me last time too, and I think I picked something ridiculous.
I'll play some disco music. I'm sure it'll pass the time very easily.
I'll make some fonts. All right.
Yeah, by the
there
way,
you go.
I lose my walk
from
the
on a scale of best happy days episode to Fonz jumping the shark episode. I'd say this is maybe not the best happy days episode ever, but I gotta say it was definitely a best of. I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy to see like realistic space movies that don't involve a love affair
or space drillers.
Yeah, or giant bugs like in Starship Troopers.
Dude, would you like to know more?
Awesome.
She's like, no,
I
would not.
Movie. Yeah. I love that movie, but I'm just glad that space travel doesn't necessarily have to include giant bugs.
That's true.
Or monoliths.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, Darren?
Oh, well, let's see. In my rating system, which will be based on numbers, I'm going to give it, I would say I'd give the book 10 souls I'd give the book 9 souls out of 10, and I'd give the movie.
Is that the Hades rating? What? Is that the Hades rating compared to the Ares rating?
Oh, the Ares rating. You know, maybe it's how many days I expect the mission to last, you know. I'd say. You know, book 9 out of 10 and movie like 8 out of 10. You know, I think, or even more to say, I'm definitely going to buy it as soon as it comes out. You know, there's some movies that, you know, that I won't do that. I have a lot of movies, but, you know, it's going to go right up on my shelf next to, you know, Gravity and Interstellar. And, you know, but I'll probably watch it more. You know, just to, I mean, I'm not really going to pop in Gravity and be like, you know what I want to see? I want to see Sandra Bullock leaping between space stations because they're right next to each other. But that's here, they're there. But no, it's overall, if you even have a casual love of space, you know, there's no reason not to see The Martian or read the book or do both. It's definitely worth your time. Yes, there are some aspects that could always be improved, but he did his homework. A lot of great science. You know, a lot of fun in a dangerous kind of, you know, life or death situation, which is hard to come across. But I can't see how they'd make a second book or a movie. But when The Martian 2 Electric Boogaloo comes out, I'm ready.
You know, it also, just, as a side note, was just in that the movie was just the way they portrayed Mars was just absolutely beautiful. Like,
oh, yeah.
If anything, just see it for the visuals. Like, the visuals are pretty stellar.
Well, in the book, it's got the little map in the front.
Would you say they're interstellar?
Oh, I like that you picked up on that. I was wondering if anyone would.
And here I am, like, pulling out, like, but in diagram, oh, you're making a joke. But in the book, it's like, oh, there's a couple craters here. And when he's, like, doing the travel in the rover, it's like, the Grand Canyon's over here, and there's this giant mountain. I'm like, wow, okay, yeah, this does not do it justice. Mars is beautiful.
Well, I was going to think about a rating system that involved, like, maybe from the best disco song to the worst disco song, and then I realized those two are the same. So, doesn't really help.
What is
so
that?
I need to know now.
What is the best / worst disco song?
I don't know.
No, I told you the best disco song. He played, what was it, the least
hot stuff?
Yeah, it was the least horrible disco song.
And that's
song
when,
she
of
had.
Course, he had the RTG in there with him, which was even funnier.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, I would say let's do out of 5 RTGs.
That's really
hot. Yeah, exactly. So it's either flaming hot, you're dead because of the radiation. I know. Yeah, if out of 5, I think this is a good solid 3.5 for me.
Oh, Matt.
Again, it's
that's half an RTG. That means you broke it open.
Exactly.
And
you're dead.
All
I'm just gonna say we're all dead.
Dead.
Thanks, Matt. Gosh.
Sorry, guys. But it is this. I really like the movie a lot more than I did the book because of the character work that Matt Damon is able to do, and it really does bring that emotion out. And so I do. I think this is a movie that everybody should see. It's really worth it. You know, I've heard actually good things about it, even in 3D, even though I saw it in 2D. But this is, regardless of how you see it, I think this is the kind of movie that is worth seeing because it can inspire some great things. And it does. You know, there's a go and read the book too. Check it out. See what you think. This is good stuff, you know, and again, what is kind of nice about this movie is it is rated PG-13, but it's not like overly crude or anything. Like, there's not tons of language in it, which is great because it is something that you could feel like you could probably take, you know, older kids to and not be like, oh, what are they going to, you know, that's great. That's the kind of movie. And again, we got a movie that it can inspire maybe kids to be like, I want to go into space like that.
But
and
not to
that's
Mars,
a really cool thing.
Yeah, dangerous. Right.
Yeah, not to Mars. You've seen
Don't
Mission
go
to, Mars.
To Mars.
It doesn't turn out well.
Red Planet. Oh, yeah. Let's just say we've had some bad Mars movies leading up.
We have.
Dear
we
Lord.
We have. But luckily, this isn't one of them. I'm really glad that we got an opportunity to talk about this. And for all you guys listening to the show, you know that we did the contest with the reviews. So I want to thank everybody again for giving us those reviews on iTunes. It means a lot. If you're an Apple user, hit that subscribe button. It does really help us out. And of course, those star ratings and reviews, they help out a lot too. So continue, as you're listening to the show, think about it. If you haven't done that, go ahead, give us a star rating review. Really appreciate it. If you are not an Apple user, we here at Trek FM have you covered. You can get the shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone. And, of course, you can stream and download the MP3 file from the website at trek.fm. Or you can grab the RSS link and pop that into any podcatcher and listen anywhere, anytime. I really want to thank Ken Tripp for his support of the network through Patreon and being the associate producer here on the show. It's through Patreon that listeners can support Trek FM coming to you each week. We need your help. It does cost a lot with the bandwidth, with the storage space, with everything else that we use to really make this work for you guys. So join the team. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. We've got some great perks for you. We've got tons of things you can be a part of, exclusive content, producer credit, seats in the content development team, and of course, you can also join the Patreon roundtables as well. So I hope you'll join us there. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm. And of course, like I said, we're on Twitter at trekfm, Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And heck, leave us a voicemail. Look in the sidebar on the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. Well, guys, thank you again. I mean, this was an absolute blast to be able to talk about, and so much fun.
A decompression blast, maybe?
Yeah.
Don't bust your airlock.
A little less dangerous. But so, Drea, tell everybody where they can find you online if they'd like to connect. And then, of course, let them know about Educating Geeks.
Sure. I am online on Twitter at PCFChick. And I am an associate producer for Educating Geeks. It's a podcast where geeks help geeks discover new passions. We take new topics and educate one of our own or a guest host on why we love it and or why maybe it doesn't have the same nostalgia to us now as it did back then. It's educatinggeeks.com, Facebook, Twitter, at Educating Geeks. Our next podcast coming out is our Educating Geeks drinking game rules on the first season of the Doctor Who reboot. And then after that, it's slipping my mind, but I know Zelda Ocarina of Time is coming up. So if those are things you're interested in, that's just a little. And I believe Matthew is joining us for a Dune episode on the book, I believe.
Yes, so, we are going to be doing Dune.
But have you played the board game?
I've not played a board game, and I need to start the book sometime soon.
It's a long book.
But it is a long book, but I'll get there. I'm not too worried. Thanks for
So come check us out. You can get our podcast on our website at educatinggeeks.com or on Stitcher or iTunes as well.
Well, Darren, it's great to have you in the 602 anytime. Of course, you're on a few places around the web, the interwebs. Let people know where they can find you there and, of course, on the network.
That's right. I host one of our network shows, Earl Grey, which is our Star Trek The Next Generation podcast, along with my co-host Philip and Daniel. And boy, we've just passed 100 episodes a couple weeks ago, still going strong, still plenty of topics to talk about for a show that's been off the air for like 20 plus years. But you know, it's more fun than it sounds. And we hope you'll listen to us every week here on Trek FM. Around the internet, they can find me on Twitter. That's the best place. That's under Twitter, under username Dr. Sci-Fi. That's DrSciFi. Or on my website, which is drscifi.com, where they can see what other podcasts I've been on, but also check out all of my Stormtrooper charity troops as I troop around Southern California dressed as a plastic spaceman. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And or they could even check out at drscifi.com my back catalog of my old podcast, The Dr. Sci-Fi Show, where I would often talk about space because it is one of my loves and passions for sure.
Very yes. Spacey.
It was like sci-fi dash space. You know, it was kind of a it was a hyphen thing.
Yeah, we all like space. I mean,
I'm sensing a theme.
I mean, the sci in sci-fi is like science. You know, not SYFY. I'm looking at you, sci-fi. Yeah, Siffy. I'm looking at you, Siffy.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on that Instagram thing with the pictures and all at MRushing. You can find me on The Orb with Christopher Jones talking about Deep Space Nine. That's our Deep Space Nine only show here on the network. And I also do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We interview the authors, which is a lot of fun. So if you're kind of missing the prime universe of Star Trek, come on over to Literary Treks and let Dan and I help you find some great books to check out, some comics to check out, and some great interviews with the authors. And then I have my own personal blog at 42alifeinbetween.wordpress.com, just a place for movie reviews, book reviews, and other things like that that just kind of don't fit within the Trek FM mold. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now to hear...
But then I spent so many nights thinking how you did me wrong, and I grew strong, and I learned.